fucking dead. It was over. No rep to uphold. No bullshit to convey. She was over that, too. She wasn't going to sip from a glass of wine, withholding any personality, any hint of what made her, what defined her, that she might convey through the simple matter of ordering her preferred drink. Garden's cup. Hendrix, she ordered.
Gotcha,
the server said, then moved away. She looked to the hunting ground and saw subs avoiding her eyes, but still preening in view, hoping she was there to make a selection. God, she was dried up. Not even a tingle. The only time she'd felt anything in, Lord, it had been days, was when Stellan's eyes met hers earlier through the windows to his playroom. And those days had been the days since she was last at the Honey and Stellan had turned his attention to her. She looked down to her thigh, flipping open the phone to see no return text, and muttered under her breath, I'm a fucking mess.
Sorry, didn't catch that.
Her head snapped up just in time to watch Stellan, back in his suit jacket and definitely out of his playroom, slide in the booth across from her. God, he was gorgeous. But... what the fuck?
You were saying?
He prompted. She flipped the phone shut and tucked it against her thigh so she'd feel it vibrate when the text came in. I have something on my mind, she shared, not knowing what to make of this. Him in the booth opposite her, making an approach, sitting there looking magnificent but still inaccessible, speaking directly to her with only her there to speak to.
And that would be?
He asked. It's work, she told him.
Ah,
he murmured, glancing to the side and looking up when the server set her drink in front of her. An action he oddly watched with what appeared to be rather avid fascination, as the old-fashioned glass came to rest on the burgundy cocktail napkin.
Scotch, please,
he ordered, before the guy could ask.
On it,
the server said, and moved away. Stellan didn't watch him go, and it took a good deal. Six didn't look away when Stellan's attention came back to her.
Not in the mood tonight?
He queried. She shook her head, lifted her drink, and took a sip. When she put it down, she verbalized that same response. No. He murmured. And there it was. God. There it was. That was almost like a purr. And that purr snaked right up her pussy, an area that instantly got wet. You're finished early, she noted. He gave a one-shoulder shrug that managed to be masculine and elegant at the same time. Something only Stellan could pull off.
I thought I'd try something new.
And? She asked.
It wasn't as successful as I'd hoped.
Too bad, she murmured, taking another sip of her drink.
Is it?
He returned, and her gaze lifted to his because... he'd asked a question, but mostly because that question was strange. For you and them, of course it is, she replied.
They got a good deal out of it, I assume, unless she faked it, which is doubtful. He, however, couldn't fake it, as the evidence he left was physical.
Perhaps she shouldn't have left so soon. It would undoubtedly have been interesting to watch Stellan orchestrate something like that. Unusual for you to choose a male, she remarked. He turned his head to the hunting ground and remarked,
An experiment I'm unlikely to repeat.
She gave it some time, and this was mostly because she was arrested in the act of taking in the beauty of his profile. The cut line of his strong jaw, the angle of his cheekbone, the shadowed hollow under it, the fine lines that fanned from the corner of his eye. The straight slope of his nose, and, Lord God, that remarkable swell of his lower lip. When she realized another second and she'd start squirming in the booth, she spoke.
It might be more enjoyable if you went hands-on, she suggested. He looked back to her, and more wet surged between her legs at the expression on his face, and what was emanating from his eyes. If I fancy ass, it comes with breasts and a vagina or not at all. Six would take him up her ass, deep, hard, fast, soft, slow, gentle, any way he liked it. She'd beg him for that. On that thought, her salivary glands went into overdrive, and she lifted her drink, tipping it to him in salute, before she brought it to her mouth, but didn't take a drink. Too bad, she murmured. Then she sipped. His lips, including that luscious bottom one, curled up slightly at the ends. Mistress Six, he said softly. If she had it her way, they'd be lined up by the score and fucked raw, climaxing at her command at the tip of her whip. She stared at him, her stomach feeling like it was cramping, but her voice sounded even when she asked, You say that like there's something wrong with it. Of course there isn't, he drawled, totally and openly lying. I'd make you like it, she said in her head. I'd make you beg for it. I'd break my back, sell my soul, do anything I'd need to do to make you come harder than you've ever come before. Tying you to me, connecting you to me, making you never want to leave. He held her gaze, his face arrogant and knowing. Or I'd give it to you, her mind whispered. Anything you wanted. Anything you'd want to do to me to give you what you needed. In a way that need could never be eased and you'd always come back for more. He kept holding her gaze, but in the dim light of the bar of the bee's honey, she could swear she saw something in his expression grow soft, like he could read her thoughts. Before she could get a lock on it or better turn from him so he couldn't read anything further, for once he looked away first, not only because the server was there, placing his low ball of scotch over ice in front of him. Six picked up her drink, looked to the hunting ground, and took a healthy sip. Are you staying? Stellan's question brought her attention again to him. She put her drink down and asked, Pardon? In Phoenix, he explained. I know you travel for work, and it takes you away for long periods of time. But this time you've been back for a while, so it seems like you're staying. She had been intending to stay. Now she didn't know. For a while, she replied. He nodded, sipping his drink, and then stated, I've been meaning to invite you, simply I haven't had the chance, but I'm having a party next weekend. We've hit June, and the weather hasn't yet started baking. I'm taking advantage. We'll start with a pool party, then everyone can change and we'll move in for dinner. I'd be delighted if you'd come. She hid her reaction to that by throwing back more gin. Lee and Ollie will be there, Stellan went on, back to his gaze set unwavering on her. Mira and Trey. Felicia's bringing a couple of her toys. Pen and Shane will be there. Victor has a new slave he's enjoying, so he's bringing her. In other words, it's a play party, just to make that clear. Though, depending on how it goes, we'll make things more sociable and less structured for dinner. That will be up to the Dom. When he hesitated, she nodded, indicating she'd heard and taken this in, and he kept speaking. Belle's bringing Tiffany. Talia is bringing Brian. Arius will be out of town, as will Evangeline's partner. But Evangeline will be there in her usual capacity. Observation only. It was an unwritten rule, when referring to the honey's dom, Evangeline's partner, who was really her boyfriend, who was essentially living with her, at least in the confines of the walls of the club. People did not use his name. But he was Branch Dillinger. Her partner, her boyfriend, her sub, but he was also the honey's new top guy, Since Arius had taken a step back from operations in order to focus on opening his new club in Tahoe, and he needed someone he could trust to pick up the reins. And if Branch played it that way, wishing things to be private, he got it that way. And would, even if the man couldn't probably snap your neck with his bare hands, then walk away and not give that kill a second thought. It was just the life, and everyone obeyed that rule. Though the threat of having your neck snapped worked too. Six was just relieved Evangeline was back, not to mention ecstatic she had a man in her life like Branch. Especially after what was done to her to make her take a prolonged break. All of this happening when Six was away. It was good it happened when she was away. If she was close, retaliation would have been much different than what Arius had ordered. And even much different than the vastly more thorough way in which Branch had handled it. But it was handled. So at Arius's firm request, she'd let it be. She was relieved and ecstatic for Leany, and also jealous. Jealous because she wondered what it would feel like to have a miracle happen, after the world as you knew it turned to complete shit. And then one day, you might not be healed, but you were again whole. And if you like, I'll have a couple of male slaves available for your use. Fresh meat. I know a few who'd volunteer that I'm sure you'd like. Stellan continued. And that stomach cramp got worse. He'd provide her a few volunteers? Thoughtful. And damn disappointing. She wondered who he'd have there. And how many. I'll think about it. She told him. Please do, he said, before taking another sip of his scotch. She followed suit with her gin, practically willing her phone to vibrate against her leg, to give her a reason to get away from him. Stellan spoke again. So you're not in the mood. Will you allow me to offer you something that might strike a different mood? One I'd wager you'd enjoy a great deal. At this proposal that came out of nowhere, Six almost choked on her gin. But of course she didn't. And again, her voice was clear and cool when she asked, What's that? He shook his head. I'm afraid it has to be a surprise. But I will say it will be a surprise you'll like. I also have to say, you shouldn't wait to make your decision, or things will culminate, and we'll miss our chance. Things will culminate? Oh no. She was intrigued. Damn it. Can you give me a hint? She pressed. He made a tisking noise that she felt tap against her clit, and as was his usual, he didn't lose contact with her gaze. But he wasn't looking aloof anymore. This was both an invitation and a challenge. She just didn't know to what. And with Stellan, this sudden Stellan who was vastly different than the Stellan she'd been getting, or not, as the case was, for the last too many months, she wasn't sure how to handle it. Don't disappoint me, Six, he said quietly. The honey's ice princess, cool and composed in every situation, shying away from an adventure. I simply need to know how long it would take, she lied. I have something I need to do tonight. She didn't lie. As soon as you need to go, I'll bring you back. He'd bring her back? He was going to take her somewhere? What's it going to be, Six? He pushed. In truth, I should have asked you the minute I joined you in this booth. We risk missing the grand finale the longer we wait. Stellan, she started, wondering how to get out of it, at the same time how not to appear like she was jumping on it by accepting too quickly. She needed time to assess this change, plan, strategize, prepare, fashion a brand new Six. One who could deal with the likes of Stellan Lang and come out the other side of whatever became of whatever was happening, unscathed. And more importantly, make certain he did. Or time to find a place to hide. Or escape, her mind taunted. Coward. I've bought you a present, he shocked her by announcing. I did this some time ago. I've been wishing to give it to you, but haven't had the opportunity. Now's the opportunity. The movement was almost not there, but yet it was when he leaned slightly her way and warned in a low voice, "Don't waste it." Again, eye contact, unrelenting. Challenge, invitation. Finally. And a gift? She lifted her drink, took another healthy swallow, put it on the table, and then dropped her hand to her thigh to curl her fingers around the phone there while grabbing her clutch off the table with her other hand. She looked back to him and said, "Let's go." When she did, all vestiges of her stomach cramps disappeared. Because when she said that, Stellan Lang smiled a wicked, roguish, beautiful smile. Right at her. 2. Bait and switch. 6. Her damned burner vibrated in her clutch the minute Stellan maneuvered his midnight silver metallic Tesla Model S into a parking spot, outside a large building so far east of Phoenix that there was nothing but the building, its expansive parking lot, and a lot of desert around it. The trip there had not been short, but it had been silent. Six found this incredibly uncomfortable, and that grew by the minute, mostly because it seemed Stellan didn't. Though it was more. It seemed the edgier she got, the more he enjoyed it. It was a dumb trick. She knew it. And because she did, she should have been able to handle it. She should also have taken that time to get her head together, assess the risks she was taking, and prepare herself for all possible eventualities. But not only was she six, who prepared just enough not to get her ass handed to her, because what was the fun if you didn't get thrown a few curveballs? She also was in his fabulous car in the middle of nowhere with him. Stellan. Stellan. In other words, she was off her game. She pulled the burner out of her purse, flipped it open, and read the text. When and where? Tapping on the number pad to reply, she typed, "Wait for instructions and be ready." She sent the text just as Stellan asked. "You have a flip phone?" She turned to him to see him definitely turn to her, hand behind her on her seat and all, filling the opulent state-of-the-art interior with an authority and hauteur like it was he himself who designed it. And she liked all of that. A great deal. Oh, yes, she was edgy. "It's a work thing." In the lights of the parking lot, she saw his gaze drop to her lap, where her clutch and her hand around the burner was. And she could swear she saw his mouth get tight. His eyes got back up to her. "Ready?" "Of course," she replied. That was when his face got lazy in a way she'd not once seen. And she'd been watching, so she'd never have missed that. Then he got out of the car. She was out, too, on her feet, about to close her door, when he got into her space. In surprise, she twisted and looked up at him. "A gentleman opens the door for a lady," he declared. "I'm very capable of..." As unexpectedly as he'd gotten close, he completely erased the space between them and she snapped her mouth shut. "A gentleman?" He took her elbow. "Opens the door?" He put pressure on his hold on her and guided her from the car. "For a lady." He shut the door. "Okay, then." Six decided it was time to set some ground rules. It isn't necessary. Is this my gift to you? He asked. Apparently, she answered.
My adventure on offer to you?
He went on. Yes, she said shortly.
So we play this my way.
Her gaze slid to the large building. Having already noted there were quite a number of cars parked in that lot, it had been impossible to miss. There was also a security guard at the entrance to it that Stellan had slowed to nod at before they'd driven in. She looked back to him.
Well guarded. But why?
Is this a new club? She asked.
No,
he answered. She drew her brows together. This isn't a pound, is it?
Fuck no,
he growled, looking offended.
She'd never seen that on him either. It was hot.
And damn, it was also more than a little adorable.
Seeing that, experiencing it, not thinking Stellan had it in him to look even remotely adorable,
she realized belatedly she should not have said at the honey, let's go. She should have slid out of the booth without a word, gone home, packed, and written Arius a snail mail note he would therefore get when she was long gone. This note explaining she was taking the stash of cash she'd already accumulated and moved to... she didn't know where. Bali, maybe. No, Samoa.
Samoan men were gorgeous.
It may seem insane only maybe an hour after lamenting the fact Stellan had given nothing to her, now to be questioning him giving her something, whatever that something was going to be. But it wasn't insane, because Six was used to taking risks. She did not calculate them. She did not move through them cautiously. She met them head on. However, now this was happening, and since it was, she knew innately this was the greatest risk of all. It was a risk that could have consequences. She might not survive. In a way that survival wasn't the hoped-for conclusion simply to keep breathing. It was crucial simply to stay sane. Though she could imagine Stellan would be offended at her guessing he'd brought her to a pound. The traveling sex scene in Phoenix, known as the Pound, was not anywhere a snob like Stellan would ever be seen. And further, what it had to offer, he'd find revolting.
Are we playing this my way, Six?
He pressed.
Or am I taking you back to the honey?
Another challenge. She should apologize for wasting his time. Ask him to take her back to the honey. Go home and decide what was next in her life. Whatever that next was would be considered ridiculously unsafe to normal individuals. But it wouldn't be something that would wreak havoc on Six. Yes, that was absolutely what she should do. She did not do that. Because she was with Stellan. Finally. And apparently it didn't matter what she was risking. Even if this time she knew it was heart, soul, body, and mind. Not to mention whatever may happen to Stellan through it all. Six was Six. All in. We're playing it your way. That earned her another one of his wicked smiles. It also earned her his taking her hand, curling her fingers into the crook of his arm, and walking her toward the building like he was escorting her up a red carpet. Or down the aisle after a wedding. Lord, she had to get her head together or this could go very bad. And that bad was her losing control of, well, everything. Six needed control just as much as she needed chaos. She couldn't have one without the other because she was addicted to both, and her elaborate efforts to maintain a perfect balance kept the mess that was her from flying apart. That night, the balance had already shifted, though, so she knew she was in serious trouble. So she had to get back on her game. Pronto. She caught sight of two security guards patrolling the parking lot, both wearing head-to-toe black, from unmarked baseball caps to combat boots. And they were armed. There was a similarly attired, but without the cap, guard at the set of double doors where Stellan guided her. One of four sets of doors along the side of the building, each separated by a goodly number of feet.
Mr. Lang,
the man muttered as he moved to open the door for them. Stellan said nothing until the guard looked at Six.
Eyes!
He clipped so severely Six almost missed a step due to surprise at his tone. The guard immediately looked to his boots.
Okay. What was that?
Stellan ushered her through the door. When it closed behind them, she looked to his profile.
I'm not exactly in the closet, Stellan.
He dipped his chin to catch her gaze.
That doesn't matter.
I, she began, we shouldn't delay. And he set about making them not do that, by moving her. It was then she heard the noise. Muted cheers, like at a sporting event.
Right. What the hell was happening?
She saw they were in a long hall that curved on the interior wall at the ends, like they were in the cement-floored, cinder-block-walled, currently deserted foyer of an auditorium. There were also a number of doors along the inside wall, all closed, all staffed by guards, all just like what would lead into a theater. Stellan walked her down to the third set, turned them toward the doors, nodded to the guard, this one catching Stellan's eyes but not Six's, and the man moved to open the door. When he did, a wave of sound came out. Definitely a sporting event, and you could tell that not only by the roars of what had to be a large crowd, but also by the scaffold structure that held bleachers that were on either side of a passageway. That wide walkway led to what appeared to be two throne-like, very high-backed, clean-lined, attractive chairs at the end. The chairs were butted arm to arm, and each one had a small but ornate circular table next to it at its free side. Beyond that, the tall, wide, cream leather backs of the chairs obscured whatever was happening. Stellan did not move them to the steps that led to the bleachers. Of course not. He led them around the side of one chair, and there she stopped so abruptly, Stellan stopped with her. There was a sunken pit in front of her. Large. Oval. Lined at the sides and bottom in thick black mats that now shone in places. With oil. And probably sweat. Good Lord. It was a gladiator pit. Quickly, her attention moved to the two men currently grappling in the pit, not far away from where they stood. And she felt her legs start to tremble, and they weren't the only things on her body experiencing that sensation. The men were glistening, muscled, mostly naked, magnificent savage brutes that were locked in combat with their only adornment, outside of full-body oiling, a black leather belt around their waists. This had a small leather triangle above the pubis, from which led snapped straps that rounded their erect cocks and high, tight balls, with another strap coming from the behind the balls, separating each testicle, snapped to the cock strap. From the back of the belt, shanks of leather curved around the sides of their asses and under them, cupping them and drawing the cheeks up, with another thick strap cutting through the crevice, opening it, a wide silver ring placed precisely, highlighting their anuses.
I knew you'd like it,
Stellan purred in her ear.
And damn it all, her movement was jerky when she forced her head around up to look at him. He did not hide, he was pleased. Yes, he knew she liked it, he'd guessed how much, and he got off in a big way that she did. Even so, she hid she liked how pleased he was.
Before she could say anything, he guided her to her chair, and before she fell down, she sat down as gracefully as she could, which fortunately was an effort that went smoothly. He barely got his ass in the throne beside hers, when, appearing at his side, there was a female server, in nothing but another variety of black leather straps, clearly the theme, though hers covered her completely at strategic parts, leaving all the rest bare.
"Refreshments, Master Lang?" she asked.
"Scotch," he said, and turned to Six, raising his brows and remarking, "They don't have a full bar, but they have most everything you might want."
"Gordon's cup," she said.
That got an amused look from Stellan, something she had seen but not much since she'd been home. She'd missed it, horribly. She knew it before, but she knew it keener then. She was in a dangerous place. Very dangerous. Precarious. He turned to the server.
"Can you manage that?"
"If we can't, I'll return," she said, obviously having no idea what the drink was.
"A male slave serves this mistress,"
Stellan ordered before she left. She nodded, bowed, and took off. Stellan turned back to Six.
"I didn't know there was a gladiator pit in Phoenix," she remarked.
"It's new,"
he replied.
"How new?" she asked. He shrugged.
"Around 4 months."
She turned her attention to the space, which had high bleachers going up behind a variety of double sets of thrones like the ones she and Stellan were in. All the thrones flanking the pit, having the best views, sitting maybe only 4 feet from the edge. She took it all in, and noted there were a few thrones that were empty, not many, but most of the bleacher space was taken by bodies. There had to be hundreds of people there. Her eyes again caught Stellan's, noting something further. He was watching her, not the warriors in the pit. Her. Closely.
"You didn't pay to get in," she stated.
"Tickets need to be purchased in advance."
"You didn't hand a ticket to anyone," she noted.
"No."
He looked to the pit.
"I didn't."
"Okay. Okay. Shit. You run this, don't you?" she queried to his profile.
"I have a few other investors,"
he answered, not taking his attention from the action.
"But yes."
"But yes."
Trying not to appear dazed, she looked all around again. This was a gift to her? How? Why? She avoided the men in the pit, tuned out the cheering that was hitting extremes, and looked among the thrones. All doms, for certain, though she couldn't know if they were the other investors. If they were, there were a number of them. Some had 2 people sitting on the 2 chairs, men and or women. Some had only 1. Some had a sub sitting on the floor by their chairs. 2 had what obviously were gladiators defeated earlier. The defeated were on all 4s at their dom's feet, still in their belts, but although 1 was too far away for her to see, another was just a few thrones down. And as it was pointed her way, she saw the raw red of his ass cheeks, as well as the cream coming from it. So there was a definite price to pay in losing. My, my, my. "Who gets the thrones?" Six inquired, turning back Stellan's way.
"Owners,"
he shared. "Investors," she pushed. He looked to her again.
"No,"
he said slowly.
"Owners."
"Owners. Of the warriors."
He knew she caught on, and she must have given something away, something that pleased him, because he didn't hide it. And she liked that she'd pleased him. But again, she hid it.
"They pay an impressive sum for their warriors to play. So they pay for their seat to be unobstructed,"
he shared.
"But also, in the end, however way they wish to be,
They're part of the show.
Obviously, from her superior vantage point, she could definitely see dipping into her painfully acquired and carefully attended stash of cash for such a show. He turned back to the action. Six did too. The instant she did, the sexual savagery of it smacked her in the face, drove up between her thighs, throbbed through her nipples, and shivered across her skin. And once it caught her attention, she couldn't look away. The beauty of it was too extreme. She was captivated. She wanted one, and she didn't even know what it meant to own one. But she wanted one. She wanted her own gladiator to battle for her, earn the spoils of his victory for her, or take the punishment of defeat for her. Perhaps the only thing that could draw her attention did just that. A tall, built, good-looking, well-endowed male slave appeared at her side. He had a black belt around his waist. Leading down from the center of the belt, his large cock was trapped in an upward position beneath black leather laces, surrounded by rivets. His impressive balls caged with it, but bulging out the sides. He also had a cut crystal glass filled with ice, and a slightly murky liquid with visible bits of pepper on a tray. The bartender clearly knew what he was doing, or had access to the internet. And Stellan clearly had someone who rocked in picking server attire. The slave set the glass on the table by her side and backed away. After she lost sight of his attractive chastity cage and the meat it packed, she picked the glass up to take a drink before she set it aside. And she did all of this, taking her attention from the pit, as sparingly as she could. And Six would discover all victory and defeat entailed when what appeared to be an unofficiated match ended at the loud sound of a gong reverberating through the space. This happened after the crowd grew frenzied when one combatant pinned the other to the mats on his stomach, reached between his legs, and they heard the pained grunt as the straps were ripped from around his privates. Six sat back, tucked her clutch in her lap, and crossed her legs. She did this because she knew very well it gave the appearance of being calm and collected. It had the added benefit of tightening her flesh around her misbehaving clit, and ending the quivers quaking of her inner thighs. She'd already exposed to Stellan she liked what she'd seen, though he'd watched her in playrooms, so he could hardly be in question that she would. How much it affected her? She felt it paramount not to expose. She felt heat in her legs that had nothing to do with the winner dragging the loser up to his knees by his hair. And she slanted her eyes sideways to find Stellan was not interested in the pit any longer. If he was at all, this was her scene, it was not his. He was studying her legs. Six instantly looked back to the pit. The winner had thrown the straps in the loser's face and was working the crowd, squatting and shouting, pumping his bent elbows into his body with fists clenched, circling the loser who was still on his knees, head bent, strapping himself back up. The winner stopped in front of a man seated in one of the cream chairs, who looked easily like he could be given his own belt, take his place in the pit, and win. The victor dropped to his knees, ripping his straps off his cock and balls, and lifting them, head bowed, toward his master. She couldn't hear what the master said since he was on the curve of the oval, several sets of thrones down from her and Stellan. But whatever he said allowed the winning warrior to toss his straps up to the floor, in front of his master's seat, then take his feet and stalk to the loser. Catching the losing warrior by the hair again, he took him unresisting to his back, with a moist, resounding thud of slickened flesh on mat, and the crowd lost their minds. The winner dropped to his knees again, jerked the loser's legs up high, pressing them out. The loser held this position as the winner guided his cock where he intended it to be, dead center of that silver ring, and pounded in. An answering pound rocked Six's body. God. Glorious. She did her best not to press her legs together, because she knew Stellan would not miss it. She also did her best not to come right on the spot. She had on a lace thong that in no way would absorb the slick she'd leave if she allowed herself what she needed very, very badly, watching the winner take his reward and the loser give it. Instead, she endeavored to watch the action like it was mildly entertaining, and knew she failed at this. But at least she wasn't staring in the open-mouthed, undoubtedly drooling awe she would have used if she'd let her true reaction free. It became apparent that the triumphant warrior was gracious in victory when he started brutally fisting his opponent's cock. The loser came first. The winner bellowed his climax minutes later. The crowd went wild. Although her seat was equal to none, mid-oval on the wide side, she was going to ask Stellan how to buy tickets in the bleachers, because she'd attend again. That was for certain. She just wouldn't do it, sitting beside Stellan. After his recovery, the victorious warrior pulled out and took his feet, sauntering toward his master.
There are female gladiators, too, Stellan said, as Six watched the gladiator use his beefy arms to pull himself out of the pit, the sides of which came up to his chest, and he was not a small man by any account. They usually open the night.
I'm sure they're quite popular, she murmured, still watching as the winner grabbed what appeared to be a wet towel from the table beside his dom and roughly wiped his cock clean.
She kept watching, now with some surprise, when a dominant sneer rolled over the champion's face as he stared down at the man seated on the throne, while that man stroked the back of his flank. That was when she knew. She knew who owned who. And the crowd again lost their minds when the gladiator cut the back of the man's head in one mighty hand, wrapping his fingers around his still hard dick with the other, and forced the man in the chair to take him deep into his mouth.
Oh, yes. She was not only buying tickets. When she found out the number to the box office, she was inquiring after season passes. This was a reason to remain in Phoenix. For certain.
They're both doms, Stellan told her. They trade off who competes, and if one wins, the other submits to him. If he loses, he takes the winning gladiator's cock, and then he submits to his partner. It seems to work for them, and their ensuing antics make them popular with the crowd.
Bumping into his partner's face and openly enjoying it, with the audience cheering him on, Six would tend to agree.
Thereby, Stellan continued. They each also have female subs. I hear they have very interesting parties, and also give intriguing demonstrations. They're all for hire, but they cost a great deal.
As if the gladiator felt her gaze, had seen her, or could simply sense her reaction to the show he'd given, his head turned, and his flashing eyes locked on Six's. She felt her mouth get soft. Her gaze opened up. That dominant sneer shot her way. She accepted it, beginning to return his smile, and then... Her jaw was caught in a hard grip, and she saw nothing but Stellan's handsome, hard face. She went completely still. She'd seen that look before, too. It was the one he assumed when he had a slave who was being a brat, testing his patience, and he had a lesson to teach. There was no way to control the soak that drenched between her legs, or the lean that automatically began toward him at his touch, the firmness of his hold, the look on his face.
and his touch, and the words he next spoke caused a warm, slow, gorgeous ripple to course throughout her body. An orgasm, to be sure, beautiful and nuanced in feeling. Truly the most exquisite climax she'd ever had, but indistinguishable by sight, except for the soft parting of her lips.
"You sit here as mine, Simone," he growled.
She started breathing heavily, feeling her eyes getting lazy in the languid throes of her silent orgasm, and worked hard to hide it, keeping her eyes wide and alert, forcing her breaths to steady. He'd used her real name. How did he know her real name? And she sat there as his? When? How? God.
"You can watch, because I allow it," he stated.
"Steph."
His face came right to hers. "Master," he bit.
"Oh, God. God. God."
No hope for control. Her breathing was now erratic and her response was overpowering. She eased in his grip, giving herself over. Immediately. Without thought, without hesitation, without a fight. Good Lord. What was happening? "Soon, I'll be giving you your gift," he declared.
He'd be giving it to her?
Him bringing her here wasn't her gift? "After I do, you have your time to enjoy it," he went on. "I'll be taking you back to the honey. As you were on the way here, you'll be silent on the return journey. You'll use that time to think about how inappropriate you've just been, and the measures you'll take to make that up to me. In fact, you'll have the rest of the week to think on this, so I'll assume your apology when I'm ready to accept it. We'll be creative. On Saturday, you'll be at my home. You'll enjoy the party. You'll enjoy being with your friends. You'll enjoy my attention. There, you can also look, but you can't touch, no matter what I have on offer for you. We'll entertain my guests, and when they leave, we're going to broker a deal."
"A deal?"
she whispered.
"A deal," he announced. She said no more, because he moved in further, slanting his head at the last minute, tipping her head the opposite way at the same time, and a pulse of sheer splendor coursed through her and detonated between her legs as he sunk his teeth into the side of her neck, right at her jugular. Deep. Sharp. Not breaking the skin, but she knew, absolutely leaving a mark. As fast as he moved in, he was back in her face. "A response is not required," he shared. She said nothing.
"This business you're doing later, do you need someone with you?"
he asked. Oh, God. Why was he asking that?
"Simone, I asked you a question, and your response is required for that,"
he clipped.
"No,"
she answered, stammering. Her. Mistress Six. Stammering.
"Is it dangerous?"
he queried, tersely. Again, why? Why was he asking that? How did he even know to ask? Had Arius...
"Don't try my patience further, my darling, by making me repeat myself,"
he whispered silkily. "It's not dangerous," she said quietly.
"If you're lying, there will be consequences,"
he told her. How would he know if she was lying? She didn't ask. She sat there in his grip, staring into his heated blue eyes, trying very hard not to come again, and this time do it bigger, louder, and far more noticeably. His head tipped to the side as he slid his grip from her jaw to the back of her neck. The hold was gentler, but it was just as relentless.
"Do you think I didn't catch it?"
he asked, his tone gentler, too. "Catch?"
"Don't be coy, Simone."
He was back to his silken whisper.
"Every time I make you come, I'll know it."
She decided again not to speak.
Wise of you, he said softly, like he could read her mind.
Then he brought her face closer to his, and since there were but inches between them, there wasn't far to go. But he took her there to the point she could almost feel the tip of her nose brushing his.
Until we have our negotiations Saturday evening, we'll get something perfectly clear.
He said no more, so she took a chance and gave a quick nod.
Excellent, darling, he murmured. Now what we'll be clear on is that you can look, but you cannot touch. So obviously you cannot play, not anywhere. At the honey, nor should some other opportunity cross your path. And if you need to look, you do it at my side. In other words, should you feel the need to watch, you contact me and I'll attend you. Is that understood?
I won't. She fought, clearing her throat. Fucking failed, had to do it, and hated that she loved the flash of satisfaction she caught in his eyes when she did. Need to do that.
I'll leave you with my card, just in case.
She again remained silent.
Say thank you, Stellan,
he ordered. She stared in his eyes.
You can say it, he began, giving her more silk. Or I'll carry you out to my car, bind you at ankles and wrists, gag you, take you to my home, cut your clothes off, tie you naked down to a bed, and stripe you from the soles of your feet to your shoulders. To avoid that, I'd advise you now to say, thank you, Stellan.
Different urges warring within her, battling it out in extremes that kept her body perfectly still, her mind a maelstrom of chaos unleashed. She stayed quiet.
You may think you have the skills to best me,
he whispered.
But I know you have the intelligence not to try. Last chance, Simone,
he warned. Thank you, Stellan, she gritted between her teeth.
Beautiful,
he murmured reverently, his gaze dropping to her mouth. She knew that reverence, having a headstrong sob offer obedience through clenched teeth.
It was transcendent.
Oh, God. Another orgasm loomed. Fortunately, she was successful at beating it back. He held her gaze, and she didn't know if she missed him being remote and detached, or if she'd instantly become addicted to him being everything but. Then he let her go, settled back in his chair, and reached for his scotch. Six had to take several deep breaths to steady herself before she reached for her own drink. And when she took it to her lips, she sucked back half of it. Stellan chuckled when she did. Seriously, what was happening? She sat there, staring at the now empty mats before her, trying to understand what was going on, how things had changed so quickly, and how she'd let it get so out of hand. Before she got close to getting anywhere with any of that, she found her fingers captured. And along with her arm, her hand was pulled Stellan's way. He rested it, held in his, on the arm of his chair, his fingers curled around the back of her hand, his thumb caressing the inside of her wrist. As heavenly as that felt, in an effort to wrest some control over the situation, she started to remove it from his hold. But the instant she did, his grasp intensified, the pads of his fingers biting in. She let her hand relax.
You never pull away from me,
he said softly, easing his hold and again caressing her wrist with his thumb. She stared at the mats.
Assure me I'm heard, Simone. How do you know my name?
She asked.
I'll answer that when you assure me I'm heard, darling.
She turned her head to look at him, seeing she already had his attention. Loving and hating having his beautiful eyes in his handsome face aimed her way, with that kind of extreme focus where she knew he didn't miss anything.
Not a thing.
You're heard.
this once, I'll allow you to get away with not giving me the word that should conclude that statement, he murmured. She knew how he expected it to conclude. He was a stickler with his slaves. They referred to him only as master. However, she was not his slave. She was a mistress. And yet, she'd just become his slave. Oh, yes, most definitely yes, things were precarious. Cataclysmically so. My name? She prompted.
I'm assuming, considering I went to the trouble of establishing a gladiator pit for your amusement, that you're aware of my interest in you. Taking that further, it wasn't very difficult to ascertain your name.
So you looked into me, she stated blankly, not about to share that over a year earlier she'd seen him in D.C., done the same, and had the skills to do that thoroughly. Skills he probably knew she had. And more chaos infested her brain.
We'll talk more Saturday evening, he replied.
And should I tell you to go fuck yourself, get up and walk out of here, and there is no Saturday evening? She inquired.
You have no intention of telling me to go fuck myself, sweetheart.
Her breath caught in an odd way. A way she'd never felt. This coming from his tone, the look on his face, and his endearment. All of a sudden, this was not Master Stellan expending an overwhelming amount of effort to flip a certain kind of switch on Mistress Six. This was Stellan talking to the woman at his side. A woman only two people in her life, him now being one of them, the other one appropriately rotting in prison. New as Simone. Okay, okay, okay. What was happening? There are things, she started on a rush. We'll speak Saturday. Stellan! Again he was in her face, his palm in hers, his fingers holding her hand steady and warm. Honey, I've waited a long time to give this to you, so please, enjoy this evening. And we'll speak Saturday. She knew this side of him, too. The charmer who slides in after the tyrant, assessing the challenge he was facing with a recalcitrant sub, and doing what he must to assure he got exactly what he wanted. He could be affectionate, demonstrative, even tender and gallant with his subs. Although she'd rarely heard him speak to them inside a playroom, she'd been in booths with him when he had one close, or booths around him where she could overhear. And she'd never heard him use a single endearment, except softening the term slave with a my, or an additional beautiful or something akin to that. Yes? He prompted. Yes, she agreed. Still facing her, he turned his head to look over his shoulder. And when he turned back to her, he was smiling. Nope, not wanting the blank back. Yep, instantly addicted. And yep, times two, her situation was cataclysmically precarious. In the extreme.
Your gift arrives, he declared.
She stared. He sat back. And she saw that two men were walking in at the narrow part of the oval. And like the last two combatants, they were tall, large, powerfully built, and although one wasn't difficult to look at, the other, bald, taller than his opponent but leaner to his adversary, stocky, was very handsome in a harsh, rough, craggy way. They hit the edge of the pit, jumped down, and the mildly attractive one moved in the opposite direction. The bald, craggy, handsome one moved their way.
His name, for the purpose of these proceedings, is Flamma.
Flamma? She asked, as the man's gaze swung from Stellan to Six, back to Stellan, then settling on Six as he continued toward them.
Considered second only to Spartacus as the fiercest gladiator in history.
Stellan explained. As the tale is told, he was apparently awarded his freedom 4 times due to his popularity.